This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 203 for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me, as he often does, Hammond Chamberlain of Beyond the Playlist and Soundography, which we're going to hear a little bit more about in just a minute. How are you, man?
I'm good. How about you?
How's the summer going?
Good. I'm actually counting down now to Dragon Con.
Nice. That's right. Wow, man. That's in like what? A month?
A month. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, and we have a tie-in there in that Brian Dunaway is probably busy with that as well.
Yeah, I'm actually his assistant this time.
Oh, cool. I think I did know that.
Yeah, I'm going to be helping wrangle people and set junk up, as far as I know.
Wrangling is good. Are you wrangling Brian?
I don't know. I think I might be wrangling quote-unquote talent.
You're wrangling Brian. Oh, good luck with that. Well, I love you, Brian, but wow.
I mean, I stage managed for a bunch of years, and I've dealt with various types of flighty actors and egos. Okay. So there's not much I haven't dealt with. And then you throw in my time working in the jails. I'm okay.
Yes, I imagine you are.
There's a sense of self-security I have when I'm trying to get people to do things.
Yeah. Well, and you don't have to worry about ego with Brian. You just have to worry about
no, not squirrels. Him. I'm talking about other people.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. The shiny object is what I have to worry about with Brian.
Yeah. There's no shiny objects at Dragon Con. What are you talking about? There's 8,000 costumes walking by in a parade. Oh, man. I'm excited for you. I think that's going to be great. This is your first time going, right?
Yes.
Ah, so cool. So cool. Well, you'll have to give us a full report when you get back.
Well, actually, I return the night before my next Citadel Cafe appearance.
Oh, okay. Will that be enough time to like, decon?
Well, I'll have some place to vomit all the stories.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Because my wife won't care.
And I suppose with your podcast, you record so far ahead of time, no one wants to hear about Dragon Con at Christmas.
That's right. Well, and the thing is I've already recorded into October.
Oh, my God. You're putting me to shame here, man. This live-to-hard drive thing has its appeal, but at the same time, if I don't have myself organized by, like, Monday or Tuesday, I start to panic.
And that's the main reason why I record so far ahead. I started this show with no internet credibility and no name. So the idea of being prepared in case someone said no has now just gone to a kind of a crazy level.
Yeah. Are you implying that I have credibility in an internet name? Because I would argue, yes, I would argue the opposite, my friend.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like this month I'm going to have 3 bonus episodes, too.
Wow. That's awesome. Is that part of the Patreon?
Yeah, so it... No. It's just I've recorded some extra people who have, you know, timely things going on. There are going to be a couple Kickstarters that I talk about. And then there's another guy who I interviewed who plays for the band The East Hills. His name was Hank Campbell. And he was super awesome. And I just wanted to get his out sooner than later because he was just so cool about everything.
Oh, nice.
Very cool. I actually owe Phil quite a bit about a big thank you for getting that interview going, because it was a goofy Twitter exchange that we had on the internet that actually got that interview for me. So thank you, Phil.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, shout out to Phil Root for sure. Constant in our chat room. He's there now and a guest last week on the show, which was really fun.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I listened and thought it was good.
Yeah, no, Phil's a natural podcaster. I much enjoyed it. And not to say that I don't enjoy, you know, podcasting with my 3 regulars here on the show, but it's always nice to have a new voice in the mix just to have something fresh. Keeps me on my toes and difference of opinions. And I knew from reading in the chat and in the Slack chat that Phil had a voice about story. And, you know, when you're analyzing movies and television stuff, it's always nice to have that kind of, you know, depth to the conversation, as opposed to just like, well, you know, was it cool? Was it fun? Did I like it? Did it not? You can kind of get into the more than just the subjective side of things and say like, well, was it a good story? Like, was it told well?
And you'd know that Phil had some serious mic skills if you'd been in the last Artist Roundtable guilt shot.
Yeah,
that's a guilt shot.
Right in the feels. Right in the feels. Yeah. So it is unbelievable how the delay of one project this year for me has just catastrophically screwed up my schedule all summer long.
And
it's not, the project itself is still going well. It's just that everything else around that project in my life has just been flipped. For those of you that don't know, the Forge Publishing thing that I've been doing, it was meant to all kick off around April, but lots of forces outside of my control, outside of Piper's control. You know, obviously her career comes first, so there's school stuff and work stuff, and then I had work stuff. So it's hard to find just the right time for this sort of thing, because, you know, the campaigns do take up a lot of time. We are getting ready to relaunch, though. So I'll mention it again at the end of the show. But forgepublishing.com to subscribe to the newsletter. You will be the first people to know when the Kickstarter is going to go live. So if you're interested, go subscribe. If you are already a backer to the previous project, you don't have to worry about it. You will get a notice on Kickstarter the same way. So there'll be a little bit of overlap there in the Forge Publishing newsletter and the backers. I apologize if it's too much of the same, but it's only once, you know, in your inbox that I'm going to do this for the next little while. So once it's over, it's all good. But we're getting ready to relaunch. We got some quotes in from the printers, and, you know, I'm excited. It's a lot to process, but we're getting there.
I'm looking forward to it again. Sydney was very upset when it got canceled. Because all she wanted was the book, and like, it's my book. And she's like, no. Yeah, she was very upset because she thought she was getting it.
I see. There might be some options for people with the new one. I think a lot of people will be happy. Speaking of Kickstarter projects and stuff like that, I know that you guys have had some developments with Soundography in the last little while.
Yeah, we have started getting Soundography episodes out to the Kickstarter backers. I think episodes 1 and 2 are already in the throbbing ear holes of our backers.
That's awesome. And congratulations.
Yeah. And we recorded our first backer-chosen episode just a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And had a great time with that. And then this Saturday, we're recording episode number 6. And then once we get the website and all the kind of bells and whistles together, I guess we'll be in full swing.
Nice. So is it soundography.com? Is that the?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a thing up there now. There's not a lot last time I checked, but it shows you what we got going. And I think the Alan Parsons is up there and your art is up there.
Oh, cool.
And
I didn't know the art has been revealed. It's one of the reasons why I brought it up.
Hang on.
Because I haven't touched base with you guys yet.
Let's take a look here. Soundography. I know you hate like computer work on the.
Oh no, it's fine. You keep talking. I'm googling it now.
So it's going, and I think if you click uncategorized, here. If you go to soundography.com, then click the uncategorized right underneath. There's the Alan Parsons Project episode. Then you click on that, and then there's your art.
Oh, I see. Okay. Although that's the old one.
Yeah, that's the one right before you did the cool stuff.
That's the concept sketch that I sent for approval, I think, with with just like the inked characters and
it doesn't have the album titles or anything, but still it's there and you can get a rough idea. So.
Oh yeah. No, I thought you meant that the final art was up. So.
No, I don't think we've gotten that far yet. I think he's been busy because I think Brian had some freelance work that was due on the first and he just got buried.
I'm starting to recall our conversation saying that early August was when he was going to reveal the actual final artwork. So
yeah.
Cool.
And I guess our poker chips got ordered. I ordered poker chips for Beyond the Playlist. I got them and they're awesome. Phil Rude, who did my art, should be getting his package of them tomorrow. And Phil says Soundography is great. I'm looking forward to the regular release schedule.
Nice. So thanks, Phil. So with the regular release schedule, like what will it be, a weekly?
Yes, it will be weekly. We are planning on recording 15 episodes for season one, and then depending on response and whatever we decide to do that way,
right?
Then we'll kind of play it by ear. I don't know if we'll take some time off and then start season two, or if we'll just go right, keep rolling right into extra stuff.
Yeah. Now, are you planning to do it in season chunks? Because a lot of podcasts are more of a regular thing than seasons.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what Brian's schedule is going to be best for. So a lot of that's conversation we'll have to have sooner than later.
Yeah. I'm wondering, like, it kind of makes you wonder what kind of mixer you would need to have a successful podcast series that would be released like a Netflix show.
Well, let's ask FSL, because they have a pretty popular seasonal thing. Let's ask Autopilot's first couple seasons, because they did pretty well the first...
Yeah.
Well, they did well while they were running, and they did seasons. The Diablo show was seasonal.
Well, this is the thing. Was is all I'm hearing. I mean, with the exception of FSL.
But like, it's hard to
see if there's been one that's been able to repeat the process.
Serial.
Yeah, I guess that. But that's a very is that a podcast though, or is that more of a crime drama? Like, I'm wondering. Like, the podcast as you and I know them is like, you know, candor and banter and kind of off the cuff stuff, or even if it's focused. I'm just trying to think. I can't think of an example. Anthony Carboni and Jeff Cannata, what's the show that they do? We Have Concerns.
Uh-huh.
Like, I wonder if they did that in season chunks, whether it would be successful. I name that show only because I like it and because it's the kind of show that I mean.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Because you guys do. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what's nice about podcasting is it's kind of free and liquid. So we could try one way, and then if it's not working, we could ramp back up and do a regular thing.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, if you guys had planned, you know, 10 or 15 episode seasons, and to help you with your thinking process, if the seasons were focused on maybe the obscure bands or the kind of things that you were into from a certain time frame or a certain genre, or
with this first season we just picked 15 bands that we figured kind of fit, were diverse enough that we could pull in a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
And that were fun enough that we could actually have some fun talking about them. And we've decided we're going to cover everything from what were the first two episodes. Pearl Jam was episode two.
Nice.
Episode one was Duran Duran. We've got Patsy Cline on the list. We've got Iron Maiden on the list. We've got Rush on the list. We've got the Spice Girls on the list.
Right. So not totally obscure.
No, but I mean, when you think Duran Duran, everyone knows the first three albums, but didn't realize they were releasing albums last year.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Everyone knows Pearl Jam released their first album, which was awesome. The first three albums, which were awesome. No one realizes they released an album last year, usually.
Yeah. Is it good?
It's okay.
Or should people listen to the show to find out?
I can tell you it's okay. Listen to the show.
Nice. So, yeah, and that's, I think that's really cool that, you know, because you guys are so steeped in music that someone like me that knows those bands, that remembers liking those bands, might then discover, oh, hey, I don't bother to follow music that closely. Like, I rely on my friends to tell me what's good, or movies, you know, I'll hear music from movies and I'll want to go check it out. For example, Stranger Things made me very nostalgic.
Speaking of that, the music for that feels like it was pulled from a Tangerine Dream soundtrack for the movie The Keep.
Right.
And I freaking loved that.
Yeah.
It puts you so directly in that mindset as you hear it. And I love that. And with all the composers for TV shows I've been interviewing lately, I really would like to get a hold of him, because I'd love to understand the thought process behind developing such a perfect 1986 synth sound.
Hmm. Yeah, no, they do. They do really well with the soundtrack, and apparently they're coming out with an official release. For the soundtrack. So not just the composition, but like the actual songs that they cue in the show.
There's a there's a movie called The Infiltrator. It starred Michael Cranston or Bryan Cranston.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the takedown of the Medellin cartel on the U.S. side. So it's like Narcos, except on the U.S. side.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed the guy who did the composing for that. and how he went about recreating retro sounds with modern technology, and how he found all these old pieces of equipment to actually be authentic was awesome. Mm. Hearing him talk about.
Yeah, if you can, I imagine it's probably really hard. Like, everything nowadays is meant to sound so clean and so clear and so crisp, and then to get that retro sound to a film, like when you're doing a period piece, where it doesn't matter. Like, if you go back far enough and you're doing, you know, a period from the, you know, the early 1900s or late 1800s. Viewing audiences just expect a nice, clear orchestral soundtrack, and they don't really have much beyond that, right? But if you have a film set in the 80s, there's a certain cassette tape grunge, right, that everybody remembers. And if your stuff is too clean, visually, you know, audio-wise, like, it doesn't really sell. And that's something I feel like they hit on really well with Stranger Things, because it's still a modern show in terms of how they tell the story, the pacing, it's obviously digital. Like, you know, like it's still, it looks right, but you can tell the effort that went into making it look right.
Well, and the thing that I'm most impressed with Stranger Things, as far as production quality goes, is the fact that they got the color palette right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing, is I feel like the 80s had colors, but they were all just a little washed out.
Yeah.
And they got the color palette so dead on.
Yeah. And a lot of it too is just worn. Like kids wouldn't have new stuff all the time. Like, it would just, you'd be wearing the same jeans until you ripped holes in them.
Yeah. I will throw out this too, that the guy who played the boyfriend, what's his name? Steve something, Steve H, whatever his name is.
Got the hair.
The guy with the hair. Mm-hmm. Is it wrong there's something Garrett-like about him?
I don't know if I thought it until you mentioned it, but my gosh, you're right. Yep. That is hilarious. And he gets more and more Garrett-like as the show goes on. I feel like his hair got bigger as the
show. When he goes into the garage and she's swinging the baseball bat, yeah, all I could see was Garrett singing Risky Business.
That's great. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I agree. He's definitely got a Garrett vibe going on. The thing I found very odd in some ways about the casting for that show, the older brother to Will, the one that I can't remember her name.
Photographer.
Yeah, what's the older girl's name? The sister. They end up going hunting for the monster later on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of their names. I just know who they are. She's the idiot climbing into the wet tree.
Whatever
that is. Shall we start spoiler?
Yeah, we should probably give a spoiler warning. Hammond's almost finished the series. I've finished it. I'm not going to. I don't want to spoil anything too bad, but I want to be able to talk about, you know, some things that have happened throughout the season without ruining it for people. So if you haven't watched the whole thing from start to finish, then you may want to bail, just because it was such an enjoyable show, and I don't want to ruin it for everybody. Everybody gone? Good. The end, when they're gone to hunt the monster, you notice that there's like a romantic vibe sort of happening with them.
Yeah.
I didn't find it all that believable, just because he's a pretty homely looking dude. Like, there wasn't much about him or them that I found believable.
See, and I didn't see it as romantic vibe as much as he pities her because she's faking. And she pities him because he's who he is in the situation he's in. I didn't see like romantic tension. I saw each of them pitying the other person for various reasons.
Oh, okay, interesting. Maybe I was taking it too much at face value, but yeah. And there's a couple of things about how they wrap up the season that were different, and I applaud them for that. But we're also kind of like, okay, you're kind of wrapping this up in a nice little bow. I would prefer it if I was left wondering. Like, one of the things I really liked so much about the show was how many questions that they threw at you in the first, like, four episodes. But that I find, and you can speak to this because of the horror genre, because I like sci-fi, but I'm not a big horror fan. And one of the reasons is that I find that horror movies will start off creepy and scary, but by the time we get to Act 3, I'm usually bored, either because I'm predicting the ending or I'm really let down by...
Yeah, and I can give you a perfect example of that. The remake of House on Haunted Hill with Jeffrey Rush and Taye Diggs is up till the very last, I'd probably say 10 or 15 minutes, is absolutely phenomenal. It creates the right mood. It creates the right tension. Everything that it does right. It looks great. It feels great. And you are really tense. When those final 10 or 15 minutes happen, it kind of really blows it. And it blows it in a way where you want something far more, threatening. And you don't get that. And that's my only complaint about that film. I might be in the minority, but I love that movie because of the things it does right.
Yeah. So, and that's what it's sort of what I feel. It's a good comparison. It's really,
it's hard to wrap up a horror movie because you don't want to, you don't want a quote unquote happy ending per se, but you want to leave people walking out feeling a little unsettled. So you have to really find it's a tight line to walk when you try to wrap up a horror movie.
Yeah. There's something about the way that they did how they switched the cinematography though in Stranger Things, just because of all the very quick shots of this beast, the fact that it didn't appear to be, or you're questioning where it was and whether it was in this world or another one. And there's all these kind of unanswered things. And then they got very literal in the last episode or two.
I'm getting ready to go into episode 6. Yeah. So that's my elliptical show for tonight.
Yeah. So it's 7 and 8 that they really kind of not tie everything up with a little bow, but it's everything just kind of gets laid out in front of you. It's like the last 15 minutes of an X-Files episode where you're just kind of like, Mulder goes, oh, and then he just explains what happens. You're like, shit, don't tell me, and that's kind of where it was. Now the best analogy I can think of is you're watching the Olympics and you've got some tumbler is doing their tumble in their vault, and the whole thing is anticipation, and you're getting ready for everything, and that's the first 4 episodes. And then in 5, 6, 7, they're tumbling down the line, and then 7 and 8 is the vault and the twist and the spin, and they land, but they land like on 1 foot and they're wobbling, and you're just not sure they're gonna fall over, and you're like, oh god, but then they stick it and they raise their hands in the air and everybody applauds. So they don't lose because they fell over, but they didn't really have a perfect landing either. And that's kind of how I felt that this season went, is the last little bit, they were really wobbling for me on that last episode in the climax and stuff. And then in the last little bit, when they started doing what they do best, which is wrapping things up, but then answering questions with more questions and then leading that into the season 2, which I'm sure they're going to do. That was satisfying. And it's almost like if they had just skipped out the middle part, like, I don't care about a fight with a monster. I don't care about, there's a couple of things that you care about in terms of the characters, but a lot of the supernatural stuff, it becomes secondary, but then they focus so much on wrapping up the supernatural stuff. You're just like, I don't really care. Stop showing me this. And this is another thing, and this is probably just me, but throughout the series, I would say good special effects. I would say just enough visual to be curious, like paint on walls kind of with fingers coming through them and stuff like that. In the last episode where they show the thing in a full-on fight sequence, not only is it unclear, you can't follow the action, but when they do show the thing, it's the worst CG that I've seen on TV in a very long time.
Well, the whole design of the monster seems very much like a J.J. Abrams monster.
That's also what I had a problem with too. It's
kind of dumb. And that bothers me. It's a very J.J. Abrams looking monster, and I don't like the way he designs monsters.
Yeah, like it's really just a person with a flower for a head,
with teeth.
Teeth. It looks like a Venus flytrap, but instead of 2 petals, it's got 5 or 4.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
It's like the mouth of the vampires in Blade 2.
Yeah, the ones that eat the other vampires. Yeah, it's got, but instead of 2 of them dropping down, it's got 4 or 5 that all split open.
Yeah.
And it has no face. It just kind of all folds up and flaps over itself, which doesn't make any sense. Like, it's so then like, if that's the way it, its face was, you'd expect the rest of it to be on par, but it's not. The rest of it is just really lanky and humanoid. So you're just like, okay, well then how did this thing come to be? It does, like, there's, I understand that the thing is jumping dimensions and there's all this other crap that we don't understand, but like, there's a certain amount of sense to design that I have to sort of feel like, I would be totally okay if this thing was not bipedal, if it was walking around and had like Ursula like tentacles and you know, maybe two big arms and had maybe not like a head on a neck, but maybe like just a head and throat that went right down into its gullet, like more Sarlacc like.
Okay, but I have this question. I don't know if it's explained in later episodes or not, but is this critter something from L's psyche?
Not that I know of.
Okay, because I was thinking it was kind of like in Forbidden Planet, where the monster was the other guy's id running around killing people at night.
No.
Okay.
No, it's more like the way that they get into it. It's do you want to know? Like, do you want me to?
No, I'll get there. But yeah, that's my thought was maybe it's her id running around killing people like in Forbidden Planet.
No. No, that's not at all. She just she's the tool. She's the telephone.
I think their friend Lucas is the tool, personally. I can't stand him.
Yeah.
He needs to just calm the hell down and stop yelling at people.
Which kid is that?
The black kid.
Right. Yes, that's what
he just needed to, when she threw him against the car. I was thrilled.
Yeah, he's kind of
he's grating. He's real grating.
Yeah.
Now the kid with the tooth problem, that kid can act. I liked him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would say that all of the kids are really good actors, and you'll forgive Lucas by the end of the series.
I better, cuz I think he's a jerk.
Yeah, the thing is that what I liked so much about Lucas, even though they wrote him very one-dimensional for the middle of the season, it does get better. But they fight like I remember fighting with my friends.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all on top of each other, all dumb.
Yeah.
A little push here and there.
Yeah.
And
you're dumb. No, you're dumb. No, you stop it. You stop it. Yeah, yeah. No, like that kind of stuff was absolutely like playground for me. And so that, so I can watch it and be annoyed by it, but then also appreciate the authenticity, I guess, of it. But you're right. What's his name? I'm blanking on all their names. The kid with no teeth.
Yeah, I can't think of. I'm not paying attention to names. I know them by character, like,
yeah, traits. Yeah, no, and that's. I don't know why I'm like that with all films. I don't necessarily remember character names. I remember faces and I remember who they play. I remember the archetype, but I don't remember the names.
Going back real fast to closers and good horror movie endings. Mm. The movie The Orphanage.
Never seen it.
You need to. It's produced by Guillermo del Toro. I don't remember who the director. Guillermo del Toro?
No, I said, ooh, I like him.
It's in Spanish, so it's got subtitles.
Okay.
But it is the kind of ending where you're not really sure it's a happy ending or not.
Mm.
And the first thing you want to do is ask someone if they think it's a happy ending or not.
Okay.
Like, I bought the movie, watched it, gave it to my mom, then made my wife watch it. And then I kept asking him, is this a happy ending? And my mom answered one way and my wife answered another, which left me with, I still don't know.
Nice. Cool. I'll check it out. Dustin is the kid's name with no teeth.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Phil.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil.
He only knows because he's got Stranger Things IMDb open right now.
Yeah, that's true. The Del Toro film that I really enjoyed that also does not have a nice little ending with a bow is Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. Well, actually, Devil's Backbone is the same way. Yes. His first movies. That's a great film.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And those are the kind of things that I really like. Like, I'm okay if the movie has a sad ending. I'm okay if not all of our heroes survive and stuff like that. And they do some interesting things with Stranger Things. I don't want to give anything away. But yeah, I was let down. And I remember being so let down because I really enjoyed, like, I want to say, out of the 8 episodes, I want to say that I enjoyed 7.5 of them. Like, I just, you know, yeah. I was right up there.
And but I have to admit, the girl who climbs into the oozing tree, that's the dumbest move in horror movie history. That's like not turning on the lights. When the tree is dripping, you don't climb in it.
Yeah, not to mention we're talking about like, what, a 15, 16-year-old girl? Like, there's just Yeah, there's just no way.
And then that's where I thought down and see where the bat was pointing? oh, it's going into the tree. I mean, could he not see the hole?
Yeah.
He has a flashlight. The bat and the bag are pointing to the hole. What the hell?
Yeah, there was some convenient writing in some of those scenes. And again, and that probably contributed to my, like, why I don't believe their adventure. Like, none of it really sat well with me. I whenever we were on any of the teenage stuff, I was just waiting until we got back to talking with the 10-year-olds. Like, that was the main star of everything for me was Elle and the boys.
Or Posse.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
When they're walking down the train tracks, I couldn't help but think of Stand By Me.
Oh yeah, no, that we've brought that up before, Shu. Yeah, no, it's absolutely nostalgic in a lot of those ways, and all the right nods. Nothing smacks you over the head as a blatant ripoff, right? Like, nothing is, oh gosh, that's so E.T. or, you know, it's just these little moments where your brain kind of goes, oh yeah, and then
It's E.T., it's Stand By Me, it's Poltergeist, it's Goonies, it's everything that we grew up on while they're showing us stuff from what we grew up on. The bicycles, the games, the Star Wars figures, the D&D, the hammer, all the stuff that we loved growing up, including the jerks in high school that broke your junk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Garrett dropped my camera, I'm sorry, flashback, no, when the kid... the bully decides to break his camera. That's something that could have happened to me and kind of almost did, and not exactly those terms, but I was in that position.
Yeah. 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 No, I remember that. So you're enjoying the show overall, like your way thumbs up on it?
Oh yeah. No, I'm loving it. I'm loving the vibe of it. I know that Winona Ryder's acting is a little bit cranked up, but I think she's taking the hysterical aspect of her direction a little bit too seriously. But other than that, I think she's doing a bang up job. The guy who's playing the cop, Hopper.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be one note when I first met him, but I really enjoyed his path.
The only people that are one notes are his two lackey deputies.
Yes. Yeah. Those guys.
Johnny Exposition 1 and Johnny Exposition 2.
Yeah. Same with the guy that plays Papa, the white haired guy.
Yeah, I still don't know what to think of him.
He just plays creepy scientist number one. Like, I just there's no depth to him at all. He's always calm. There's no cracks in the surface, so you don't really get to see the character. He's just what he's written to be.
Yeah, and I feel like her ex-husband should be played by Sean Penn. I think that would have been a strong call, because that's what he's doing. He's channeling his inner younger Sean Penn.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's, but for the most part, I'm pretty impressed with the casting. I kind of stopped paying attention to Winona Ryder later on. She just was repetitive and just hysterical mom, and like, all right, well, fine, her kid's missing. I get that. So
when the sheriff decided to cut the body open, that was a really good moment, because you expected one thing, you knew it wasn't real, but when he pulled out what he pulled out, it was really good.
Yeah.
And that realization when he finally broke it to Winona and said, you were right all along. The way she responded was one of the best acting moments in the entire series so far for me.
Yeah. No, and there are some shining moments for sure. For sure. So I don't know. I guess that we can wrap up, I guess, the Stranger Things talk. I'm really curious to see what you're going to say when it's done. Before we do go, though, there's something I did want to ask you. As a dad... how disappointing is it that, as cool as this show is, it's probably not for kids?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I don't think I could show this to Sydney yet. I think I'd have to wait till she was a touch older.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you're... I know Sydney's specific just because she's mature for her age. But, like, what would you think in general would be that it would be PG-13?
Well, and we've shown her. Like, she went to see Ghostbusters twice, the new one, and she loved it.
Right.
I think that I will probably wait to show her this probably for another year or two.
Yeah.
Audrey.
Yeah.
Audrey could be in college because she's so reactionary to emotional things. Like, when we watched Polar Express, all that perceived danger had her on the edge of her seat. She knew it was a cartoon, but every time that kid was put in any kind of danger, she thought it was the end of the world. Wow. And it was almost like, and watching her watch that made me anxious. And I felt bad for her because she couldn't enjoy it because she was worried the entire freaking movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like me when I watch Walking Dead.
That just upsets me because there's no resolution there. They're walking with zombies and they're unending. And at some point, the only resolution is they're going to die. There's no happy ending built into that story.
Yeah, no, I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't relax and watch that show.
Yeah, it's too much angst. I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. So interesting. No, I'm curious just because, you know, I'm enjoying recommending and sharing Stranger Things with friends and family, and like my sister is watching it and she's like, oh my god, like this is amazing and all that kind of stuff, and it's awesome. But at the same time, it's like, well, like all of like my younger sister is in her 30s, like, so it's easy to share. I don't have any kids that are even remotely close, you know.
My 17 year old nephew loves it, but I don't think he loves it the way my brother-in-law and I love it, because he wasn't around in the 80s, and a lot of that is pulling on our nostalgia.
Oh, absolutely. But
you're watching that as those kids.
Yeah, but it's still got a quality to it, and it's still got a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not nostalgia. There's a simplicity to the time. Like, there's a simplicity to just jumping on your bike and going out after dark and having your parents not really either know or worry because they know that you're with four other friends or like all that kind of stuff. It's like you just, the show could not take place today. I know we've talked about this on the show before, but like stuff like that. So I think that's what's maybe so interesting about it for you, the younger demographic. But like, it's too bad that it's such a good show, but it's still scary, gory, and has some intense moments. Like, there's I guess you can call it a sex scene, but like, there's enough in it that, like, I wouldn't want to show anybody under 13 by default, right? I mean, you'd have to, you know, you're certainly going to watch it with them if you're going to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's really funny. The, there was an ad for The Conjuring 2 that came on TV. Now, we're cord cutters. Mm-hmm. And Sydney was over at someone's house and she watched TV and they showed an ad for The Conjuring 2. She has had Audrey sleeping in her room with her all summer long because of that ad.
Hmm.
For whatever reason, that ad sent her over the edge.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the ad, so I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, it's good. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it wraps up. And then I don't know what I'm going to pick up next for my Netflix, my elliptical show. I don't know what I might pick a Hell on Wheels and pick that back up, but I don't know.
I caught up on Hell on Wheels. I think you should. I think you'd enjoy it. Just trying to think what other show. I haven't been watching TV shows. I've been trying to watch some stuff just to kind of relax in the evenings and not work too late and all that kind of stuff. But I've just been like going back to movies that I know are good, like Guardians of the Galaxy. I finished the Mockingjay, Hunger Games series.
Can I tell you something about that film?
My
opinion of it, that is the grimmest, non-smiliest, darkest, unfunnest film I have sat through in the theater in ages.
Yeah, it's not.
There was absolutely no joy in that movie.
No, none, not even at none the end. No,
none joy. None.
No, I'm having a hard time with people that don't know how to end a freaking film. Like, I feel like anything that I've been grabbing lately, they just go on forever, and then it fades to black, and you think that's the end, and then there's 3 months later pops up on the screen or something else. And it's always some obscure number. It's not like years later. Just give me something that I can imagine some time passing. Don't tell me 16 months later. Like, that's so precise. I don't understand. But anyway,
I blame the Return of the King for that.
Yeah, well, see, but Return of the King didn't pop up time frames and say, like, you know, in May, Sam wed and was happily ever after, and then nothing else happened. Like, I don't know. The Mockingjay stuff, I always find it difficult when the climaxes of these books are split into two movies. It drives me crazy. All that says to me is that you couldn't make a movie concise enough, therefore you probably shouldn't. So then you get Act 1 and half of Act 2 in the first movie, and then by the time you get to the second movie, you forget what the hell happened in the first one. So the action was good in Mockingjay Part 2. The acting is good. I enjoy Jennifer, what's her name?
Jennifer, what's her name? Lawrence.
Oh, Lawrence, thank you. She's a very good actor and plays this character younger than her very well. And then I'll see her in other things and be like, wow, like she has such range for all the stuff that she does. But like this whole PETA mind bending thing that they did where he was brainwashed and tortured, there was no indication that any time had passed long enough for him to be brainwashed. Like it did not make any sense. And he was this loose cannon that was with him the whole time. And then they end up together at the end and it's all happy and fuzzy and shiny. And it's like, and you don't believe it for a second because like you said, the whole movie is just so grim, but then you're watching and it's like a half an hour of nothing happening where she's just at home watching flowers grow and hanging out with PETA and raising children. It's like, well, I just have them walk off into the sunset in the direction of home and I'm good. Like, I don't need to know all the things that happen after, you know?
And what's really nice about having PETA on the film the whole time like that is, you know, no animals got hurt.
I agree. It's the dumbest name ever for a character. I was confused the whole first time I saw the movie, the first Hunger Games in the theaters with my sister. She had read the book, so she was explaining it to me. And I was just like, who? Peter who? And she's like, no, PETA. No, Peter. And we were back and forth like that, like who's on first for like a half an hour, you know?
Is he the bread? Is he the animal people? Or is he Peter?
Yeah, let's wrap it up, PETA. It wasn't my cup of tea. You know, I'd watched Reign of Fire when it came out, and I've watched a couple of rom-coms, and surprisingly, like, they're the better things that I've seen. Like, I'm not liking a lot of what Netflix has to offer, and unfortunately, Canadian Netflix has got really slim pickings right now. So
I watched this documentary on the fastball called Fastball. It was really good. It was very engaging. It was an anecdotal documentary about the legend of the fastball.
Hmm.
And I'm not a big baseball fan, but I like the stories around baseball. I like looking at it in historical, as a measure of history.
Yeah. I like baseball films.
I like it as a like a sociological story. And this was really good because it touched on some real legendary pitchers and some history and brought in some, you know, science. And it was really good. I watched the tail end of it with Stacey, and even she liked it, and she feels worse about baseball than I do. So. Cool.
I have to add some documentaries to my list because there's some nights where I'm just not in the mood for, like, I've got some cool sci-fi films, but I know that they've been reviewed really well, but I just look at them and it's got Tom Cruise in it. I'm just like, I can't unsee Tom Cruise now in films. Like it's not an escape for me into Hollywood. It's a reminder that I'm sitting on my couch watching some doofus, you know, act for millions of dollars, and we'll use that term loosely. Like I need to add some more documentaries. So a fastball documentary would be a good one to look for. That's assuming I can find it in Canada. I'm finding, even just in preparation for the show, just kind of reviewing what I had watched on Netflix, the website was way more helpful and cool and colorful and easier to follow than the search results that I get on my set-top box. So I have to kind of remember to pop onto Netflix on my laptop and just look around and add things to my list there, because everything from the movie posters are just, they have a more of a modern design. They're more appealing. They're more clickable. Like, you're more inclined to read about this obscure, indie romantic comedy that is actually really well acted, you know? And my problem is too, is that I know who some of these actors are, but I don't know their names. I've just seen them in trailers or YouTube videos or advertisements on YouTube. You know, or I've watched the trailer on iTunes and said, oh, cool, Maze Runner, that seems like a cool sci-fi flick. I might see that. I never go to see it. But then when it comes by on Netflix, I'm just like, oh, right, that guy from the Maze Runner thing. Like, I don't know who these people are. But for all the teenagers and the kids in their early 20s right now that have gone to the movies all the time and seen everything from, you know, Hot Tub Time Machine all the way up through, you know, whatever the latest, you know, teen heartthrob novel has been adapted, they know all these people, and so they can get into the movies and they can pick the ones that they want. And I'm just looking at these names like, I don't know who this person is. And in some of the posters on my set top box, there's nothing to indicate who's in it other than just names. And it's like, well, I don't know. I wish that Netflix had the ability to watch a trailer for the movie before you could watch it.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
That'd be awesome, because then I could say, oh, yeah, right, that guy or that girl or whoever. Like, I watched a comedy the other day when the girl from Tomorrowland.
I
can't remember her name. Something.
She's
Roberts.
Actually a really good actress.
She's
I like her.
She's a fantastic actor, and she's older playing younger in Tomorrowland, and in this particular like teen comedy, she was playing a high school kid, and she's she might be 20, so she's playing like a 17 or an 18 year old, completely believable, and it was awesome. Phil's calling me old in the chat room. Nice. Well done, sir. Pot calling the kettle black, if I do say so. But watching that, you're just like, I really enjoyed her acting. Like, it was a funny, quirky little movie. It didn't have a cookie cutter Hollywood ending because it was an indie film. I think it's called First Time or The First Time.
Heard of it.
And sure enough, like I clicked on it because I recognized her name and I thought, well, whatever. I need something to put on while I do the dishes and stuff like that. And then,
so you chose a rom-com?
Well, it's not a rom-com though. That's the thing.
The Gilmore Girls really rubbed off on you.
Yeah, I know. I was searching in particular the indie section as far as genres go on Netflix. I wanted to find something that wasn't mainstream because all the mainstream stuff on Netflix in Canada is like B-movie from like the 90s. They're terrible. So to find something worth watching with decent actors and good writing, you've got to go to like the indie section. And sure enough, it's this kid from The Maze Runner that plays the male lead in the movie. And he's a great actor. Great actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's some really, as far as young actors goes, there are some really good young actors out there. I'm just not seeing him because I'm watching the names I know. So I have to stretch my comfort zone out to kind of take in the fact that I'm not, I need to learn about younger actors now and not. And not limit myself to the age group of people who are now aging out of lead roles and now going into parent roles or cases, grandparent roles or racist old men on lawn roles. Like, the good, bad, the ugly, Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood. Yeah. Yeah. There are some actors that are still lead quality. Like Ian McKellen, I'll watch him in anything. But like, there's just, I find it difficult because they're not doing the kind of movies that I want to watch, or they're still doing the same kind of movies that I want to watch and they haven't changed their role. So, like Tom Cruise, for example, actor I recognize, I know he can act. I don't give a shit about another Mission Impossible movie. Like all the same.
Did you say Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks?
I think I said Tom Cruise. I hope I said Tom Cruise. Okay. I like Tom Hanks. Said Tom Cruise.
Well, Tom Hanks is doing another Langdon film.
Langdon film, yeah. The Lost Symbol or something?
Inferno.
Inferno. Oh, interesting. I don't know that one.
Yeah, I didn't hear until I saw the preview before I saw Ghostbusters.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet either. I've been told not to go.
I'll be honest. I did not laugh as much as I did in the first one, but I did not hate it.
Yeah, I've heard mixed. It's not awful, but I haven't heard people that I trust say that they love it, and recommend it. They go see it.
Sydney thought it was great. She liked it as much as the original. She loves the original, but that's okay. She can have a bad opinion.
Oh yeah, well, fatherhood at its finest. Oh man. Well, let's push on into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by our patrons. If you pop on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, you can find out how you can support the show directly. It's completely up to you. Any help at all will get you an invite to the Patreon-only Slack chat that we have during the week in between shows. Lots of fun happening in there. Usually where I get my Internet Minute is often in the Slack chat. But head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can be one of the people that makes this show possible. My pick this week is going to be super quick. His name is Ryota Murayama. He's on Tumblr and he is on ArtStation. I'm going to use the Tumblr link in the chat here now. He's an artist out of Japan, I want to say, freelancer. And he has this really unique anime design, but then very painterly watercolor finish to everything. And it's very fantastical. Lions and walking foxes and wolves with swords and all kinds of very mystical and mythological subject matter, all with, of course, a very Asian feel.
Okay, the pagoda with the big dog dragon sleeping is gorgeous.
It's amazing, right? Like, the work is fantastic. So if you haven't had a chance, check it out. It's Ovopack, ovopack.tumblr.com. And just that's got most of his work. His art station is new, so there's only a couple pieces. They're worth checking out. It's the same username, ovopack. But check out the Tumblr. There's a lot more to see there. But yeah, I'm enamored with his stuff right now and just been drilling through and viewing it a lot. What about your pick, sir?
My pick is so there's a movie coming out called Don't Turn Off the Lights or something like that. It's a horror movie. It's coming out. There's a short that was on YouTube called Lights Out. It's 2 minutes long, and it is the scariest thing I've seen in ages, speaking okay. of horror movies. It is well worth it, but be prepared because it will get you.
Interesting. Okay. I really enjoyed watching Stranger Things, like, in the dark. It didn't scare me, but it definitely set the right mood.
Yeah, I mean, I could see popcorn and in the dark, but for me, it's earbuds and elliptical. So,
yeah, I suppose you can't really do that in the dark.
No,
I suppose you could, but it'd be high risk. Yeah. Oh, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the CitadelCafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show, you can tweet the show, you can find us on Facebook, just use the name. iTunes reviews are another great way to find the show and share it with others. The more reviews we get, the better chance people are going to be discovering us on iTunes. I'm not sure how often that actually happens. Most of my podcast recommendations come from friends. So if you don't want to go to iTunes and leave us a review, poke a coworker and tell them that you like the show and see if they listen. That would be my recommendation. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. I am wrapping up my last commission this week, which means commissions are going to be open. So if you want to hire me, you can do it there. Also, head on over to forgepublishing.com and sign up for the newsletter if you'd like to know more about my project with Piper Thibodeau, the art book that we're going to be putting on Kickstarter very, very soon. And I'm speaking with more artists with Forge Publishing. So the newsletter is not just going to be about Piper's stuff forever. So if you're interested to find out more about what I'm doing with Forge Publishing, then sign up for the newsletter and get some more info that way. Hammond, where can people find you online?
I'm at jhammondc.com, jhammondc on Twitter. Soundography is at the Soundography and soundography.com.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Blah, 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 blah. But I don't want to pick two.
I don't want to pick two. I'm a Toys R Us kid. All right, you got to go.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.